Welcome to Breakfast with Tiffany Show. My name is Tiffany Rosdell, and I am a Tokyo-based transformational lifestyle coach. In each episode of this podcast, I want to explore the positive transitions other people have made to how they freed themselves from their struggles, what pushed them to overcome their difficulties, and how and why they felt like they could overcome. Breakfast with Tiffany Show is really all about the transitions everyone who wants to succeed makes and what they did to get there. As such, while the focus is on LGBTQ+ journeys, I want to share the stories of all people who have found their way to success. My hope is to have this platform for all of us to be together while listening to successful stories, amazing life experiences, inspirational journeys, as well as having good laughs and lots of smiles. Good morning and welcome back to Breakfast with Tiffany Show. I am grateful that you are back tuning in again to another interesting educational topic that we have on our episode. But before anything else, I wanted to set the tone before we start our episode today by honestly doing a wellness check to everyone. How's everyone doing and feeling during this very challenging period of our time? Here in Tokyo, it is 22nd of September, and the government is finally lifting up some of the restrictions that they used to have. It's also a long weekend here in Japan. Please stay safe and always look after your health. Don't forget to wash your hands. Don't forget to use alcohol every now and then. And most especially when you go out, please use your mask. Mask is really important. On a more positive side, we are finally entering the autumn season, which I love so much. One of my favorite seasons. I love all the seasons, but autumn is so special to me because next month, October, is my birthday month. Autumn has always been special to me, and I love the breeze of autumn. I love the flowers. I love the colors. A new season, a new change. Here in Japan, yesterday was Respect for the Aged Day. And today is the autumnal equinox day. A lot of Japanese people, especially the Buddhist people, a lot of families, they go back to their hometowns. They go visit the graves of their families who passed away to do prayers. Besides visiting the cemeteries during autumnal equinox day, most Japanese people, they also celebrate it by eating famous Japanese sweets, which I also love, called ohagi and botamochi. Ohagi is a sweetened rice cake. Botamochi is red adzuki beans. If you haven't had a Japanese sweet, for me personally, I love Japanese sweets because they don't really put too much of sugar. The way they prepare the sweets in Japan is not super sweet. I came from the Philippines where we have plenty of delicious traditional sweets, but the amount of sugar that we use in the Philippines is too much sweet. And when I used to do a lot of tea ceremony, we always have Japanese sweets to prepare. My sensei always prepare all these super delicious sweets and colorful, and they put designs. It's a traditional thing that they do that she ordered every week just for our Japanese tea ceremony. And I love it. It's just a perfect combination. During the autumn, ohagi and botamochi are really popular. So you should definitely try it. Another thing that I wanted to do for this podcast episode that we do every week, every Tuesday, is to have a question and answer segment during the show. I've been getting questions every now and then from friends, from people that listens to my podcast. If you have any questions regarding to the people that I interviewed in the past or topics that you would like to discuss, or even questions in regards to the LGBTQ community or health and wellness, then I will have your questions or comments on the show and we can discuss it. If you're new here listening to my podcast, first of all, I'm thankful that you are listening. And if you have any questions, if you want to keep in touch, if you have any comments, feel free to reach out. I will appreciate it a lot, and I look forward to hearing from you all. When the average person thinks about martial arts, images of certain iconic movies may come to mind, particularly the fighting scenes. However, martial arts involve much more than fighting. The benefits of taking up martial arts may be an effective way to improve mental health, physical health, and boost confidence in vulnerable members of society, such as our LGBTQ+ community. Our guest today, Chuck Johnson, is an international action film actor based here in Tokyo, Japan. A native of Michigan, he began martial arts training with Olympic Taekwondo at the age of 15. With a fanatic training schedule, he received his black belt in 2.5 years and 6 days later became the Michigan State Junior Olympic Taekwondo champion for both sparring and forms. Moving here to Tokyo, he started off working as a bodyguard for visiting international celebrities, working on security teams for everyone from Sylvester Stallone and Orlando Bloom to Jackie Chan. His action career began in 2004 when he was scouted by a talent agency for his martial arts skill and was cast in Godzilla Final Wars. In addition to holding the rank of master in Olympic Taekwondo, Chuck is also ranked in capoeira, karate, kobudo, and judo, and has studied Wing Chun Kung Fu, Hapkido, Hanmudo, Krav Maga, boxing, kickboxing, and Tai Chi. He has appeared in over 50 TV dramas, films, commercials, and video games in Asia and in the States, and can speak, read, and write in Chinese, Japanese, and Korean. He is the owner of the Quiet Flame Productions and trains and manages the Quiet Flame Stunt Team, Japan's only native English-speaking stunt team, and I'm also a proud member of Quiet Flame Productions. Chuck is also a very dear friend of mine. He's one of my mentors when it comes to business. Without further ado, let me introduce you to my very good friend, Chuck Johnson. Good morning and welcome to the show, Chuck. Thank you for being here with us today.
Oh, Tiffany, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well.
That's good to hear. I just want to let my listeners know that Chuck is one of my closest friends who I ask for help or advices when it comes to business. He gave me some of the most amazing advices. You always do.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
You always do. So, Chuck, I always ask my guests their morning rituals.
Uh-huh.
Just to change a little bit of the question, what is your magnificent obsession that gets you out of bed in the morning with fire in your belly and sparkle in your eyes?
Absolutely, challenge. I live for challenge. More than anything else, I love the idea of trying to figure out really complex things or trying to figure out things that people generally say can't be done. Like as soon as somebody says, you know, that can't be done, then I'm just like, ooh, that sounds good. And, you know, I mean, and of course there's limits to that, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm never going to be able to fly. I haven't figured that out yet. Within limits, I love the idea of trying to do those things that would just seem like they would be off limits. You know what I mean? Like that just that idea really, really drives me a lot. One of the reasons that I became a business person to begin with is because business always stays hard. Mm. It never gets easy, right. You know, and you're constantly dealing with just challenge after challenge after challenge after challenge.
And it keeps you motivated to do every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
So before we go, there's plenty of things I would love to discuss and ask you, even though we see each other often.
Yeah, we do see each other quite a lot. But I mean, I just think you're just an absolutely awesome person. So, and you're one of my favorite people. So I'm very honored that I get to see you a lot, to be honest.
Thank you.
It is my pleasure.
Okay. So can you start by sharing your childhood moments and your background?
Okay. Whenever people ask me, what do you do? I always really struggle with this questions because I kind of do a lot of different things. I've got my hands on a lot of different pies and I've kind of always been that way. partially again, because that just feeds back to doing that is just very, very, very challenging. I was never really an athletic kid until at 15, I discovered Taekwondo, and I'd never been good at anything before. I was a C-minus average student, really unathletic. I tried basketball, but I felt too self-conscious being on teams to really do anything or to be any good at it. When I was 12 or 13, I discovered Jackie Chan movies, and I figured out that somebody had systemized fighting. And that was the most incredible thing to me. And it, like, you can use your body to do all these amazing things. And the idea of it was so incredibly appealing. And like, I just started watching Jackie Chan movies and like imitating them. And then I saw somebody do the splits and I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So then I thought, okay, I'm going to do that too. So then I just started stretching every day, like intensely. How do I do that? That crazy thing that guy's doing.
How old are you again?
I was 12.
12, okay.
And she's like, stretch. So then I just started stretching every day.
That's very young for you to know and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So then I just started. And then within about a year, I got the left split. And then I thought, okay, well, I can do it this way. So I guess I need to be able to do it the other way. So then I started working on the right split and then the middle split. And then by the time I was 13 or 14, I could do all of them. But I hadn't actually done any martial arts at all. I was just imitating what I saw in movies. And then when I was like 15, my best friend at the time was a Korean guy, really strong, naturally very strong guy. And he brought one of my other friends in for a trial lesson at a Taekwondo school. And then I thought, well, if he's doing it, I want to do it. He brought me in for a trial lesson. And then the other friend never signed up. The friend that got me into it ended up like quitting like 6 months after I got in. And then out of the three of us, I was the one that kept doing it. By the time I finished high school, I got my black belt within 2.5 years. 6 days after I got my black belt, I won the Michigan State Olympic Championships for sparring forms and board breaking, which was crazy because I'd never wanted anything. And then it got super addictive, right? And then I was like, I'm going to go to the Olympics. And then after that, like, it was like, okay, I want to go to the Olympics. What do I do to go to the Olympics? And then I got super, 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 super into it. And then that's what brought me to Asia. And the story just continues onward from there, I guess. And then I still teach Taekwondo, as you know. I run a Taekwondo school in Roppongi. But then I also got into doing action films. Then I got into doing functional fitness and just all kinds of different things. But it all started from finding something that I was good at because I didn't think I was good at anything.
How did you end up here in Japan? How long have you known Japan?
I've been here for like 20 years.
That's pretty long.
I'm old school.
Yeah.
I'm one of the like Tokyo OGs, right?
OGs, exactly.
Yeah, I've been here for forever. And I started because basically, like I said, I wanted to go to the Olympics. And then, but I didn't.
So you were saying earlier that you went to Asia. Was it the first country that you went or some other?
I went to Korea first.
Okay.
And at the time that I went to Korea, I'd never been outside of America before, right? So for me to make the jump to come to Asia was kind of a crazy thing, but I just really, really wanted to be good at Taekwondo. And then my best friend who had gotten me into it, he went to Korea and he trained and he came back a monster. So then I thought, well, if he can do that and he can come back really good, then I can do that. So then I went and did that. And then I did come back way, way, way better than when I left. So then I started going back and forth to Korea all the time, like on university study abroad programs, until it got to the point that I took literally every single class there was in Korea. And then they're like, well, you can't go to Korean anymore because you've taken all the classes. And I said, okay, well, what's the next closest country? And they said, well, there's Hong Kong, but you have to have a business degree to go to Hong Kong. So then I added a business minor to my degree, just so that I can go to Hong Kong, because that was near Korea, taught English at night, and then went back to Korea again after I finished. And I actually finished my university program in Hong Kong. Right?
So you stayed there longer.
It took me 6.5 years to graduate, because I was just studying abroad all the time. It just took me forever. But I finished university in Hong Kong, and then saved up money, and then immediately went back to Korea to train, came back, and then I won a few non-Olympic qualifying national championships. Which for Taekwondo guys doesn't mean like a lot. The only ones that really mean a lot are Olympic qualifying competitions. And I never won anything that was Olympic qualifying. Partially because I was just trying to do everything by myself. There's a lot of resources that go into making an Olympic athlete. And I didn't know that. You know, I mean, it's extremely expensive. And I didn't know that either.
Were your family supported everything that you were doing when you were in Asia too?
As much as they could. But I was the youngest of six. You know, so...
Big family, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. It was too big, I think. This is why I've only got one kid.
For American, it's big family, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I came from a pretty big family. I mean, they were as supportive as they could be, but everybody just had their own thing and had things that they had to take care of. So basically, I was kind of just on my own and just figuring it out on my own. Long story short, I ended up in Japan because I just kind of ran out of resources. I thought, okay, well, I want to go to UC Berkeley for graduate school because they've got the best collegiate taekwondo program in the country, but that's expensive. So why don't I go to Japan for a little while and teach English? And then I can just kind of pay off some debt teaching English for a little while and then go to Berkeley and then keep trying to push for taekwondo. But then I came to Japan and then I just never left.
What made you stay in Japan? I know there's plenty of things, but what is one thing that you think that really made you stay for that long?
The really interesting thing about Japan for me is that Japanese culture just very much fit my personality. Because it's extremely detail-oriented and, like, process-oriented. Mm. Like, Japanese people, they're all about details.
Very much.
And then that fit my character really well. And then also, as you know, in Japan, there's this whole, like, kukiyomeru culture, right? Being able to, like, read the air of a room read between the lines when you're talking to people.
Mm-hmm. It's important to them.
It's, like, the most important thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, in the States, like, if you can, like, read between the lines, that's, like, a skill. They're like, wow, yeah, that guy can read between the lines.
States is, like, more like common sense, right? Yeah. You use your common sense.
Yeah, and it's, like, super direct.
Yeah, right, exactly. Right?
But here, it's all about, like, reading between the lines with people. Mm-hmm. And that also just really fit my personality. So, which I think is interesting, and it's also telling, because I think when you think about one of the things that I've always wanted to tell a lot of people is oftentimes people think that I don't fit in this world, you know, or they think I'm not good at anything. And I think, if anything, I feel like I'm a testament to the fact that it's not that you're not good at something, it's that you have to find the thing that you're good at. And sometimes that means searching a lot to find that thing. And then when you find it, it'll just fit. For myself, I felt I didn't necessarily fit in the States, but I fit very well here. So for people that feel kind of if they feel lost in where they are, maybe it isn't that you don't fit in that world. Maybe it's just that you just don't fit where you are. So all you have to do is try and go somewhere else. And naturally, some of that baggage from when you leave is just going to come with you, because a lot of it is just in your head. No matter what, some of that baggage is going to come with you, but you'll be able to free yourself from a lot of it if you just change where you are. Especially, you know, having listened to your podcast, you know, I think about that in terms of a lot of transgender people who are living in places that are really unaccepting of that, you know, and you look at like the rates of suicide for a lot of transgender people because they feel like they'll just never, ever fit in. And like a lot of it is just that they're just in the wrong place. You know, all you have to do is go somewhere where you can fit in. A lot of those problems will go away. You know, if you just give yourself the chance to just start over and just believe that there's nothing wrong with you, maybe you just don't fit there. I think one of the parallels that I see with African Americans is you see the same thing with Black folks living in the hood. Impoverished places, they're dangerous. They're very, very hard to live in. And you have people that think that that's all that there is in the world, because that's all they've ever seen. But the world is so much bigger than that. All you have to do is just figure out how to leave. And then you can just start over somewhere else, keeping yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. You are one of the most multi-talented friend I know.
Oh, well, thank you.
Let's talk about yours being a stuntman. It's one of your special skills. So what are the most memorable stuntman jobs and acting experiences you've had?
I think the coolest thing that I've ever done, like hands down, is I was doing the motion capture for a video game called Left Alive. And I'm three of the characters in the game.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And the coolest thing was is that I got to do one dialogue where I was playing both people, because it's motion capture, right? So I would play one character and then I would play the other character. The dialogue, one of them turns and walks away and then the other one just blows his head off. So basically, I got to have a dialogue with myself and then shoot myself in the head and kill me.
Okay.
And like, that was the most incredibly, wonderfully challenging thing I've ever done. I was so happy to be able to do something that was that hard. Because when you're playing characters, it isn't just about like, okay, you read the lines as this guy, you read the lines at that guy. Every character will have different inflections in the way that they speak and different elements of their character that have to come across. Even if like you're not really seeing their face because it's in a video game, those differences of inflections will still come through in voice, and they'll still come through in like word nuance and things like that. So in order to play different characters, you literally have to kind of change who you are. Usually when you're playing a character, you're in that character and you stay in that zone, like for the duration of that shoot. You put yourself in that place and then you stay in that place and you hold in that place. But in this case, I was playing multiple characters. So I would literally have to switch from one person to another.
It's very challenging too.
It was really challenging. I loved it. It was so hard and weird and bizarre. And when you're doing like motion capture, if they're taking your face as well, they put this little light right in front of your face. You're wearing this whole facial rig and there's a light that's right here so that they can capture all the wrinkles on your face. So as you're talking, like it's bouncing up and down in front of your face. Mm-mm. So it's super distracting, but you just have to act through it anyway.
Right.
And like, I love that too. Cause it was just, like I said, I love anything that's really, really hard. So
right.
It was a fantastic experience. Mm.
You also did a big movie in Japan, right?
I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I've done a fair number of fairly big projects.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
just kind of across the board.
I've had the opportunity to watch your theater show. Yes, last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was last year. And I think it was incredible. The part of
thank
it was all in Japanese. Of course, I understand Japanese. Can you tell us a bit more about that theater show that you did?
That was actually my, I think, fourth theater show.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that made that one special is that was my first time acting exclusively and only in Japanese, which was incredibly nerve-wracking.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're just up in front of hundreds of people and you have to remember all these lines. But it wasn't even like modern Japanese. It was like hundreds of year old Japanese. It was really, really challenging to do. And what I learned from that experience is that, okay, I can do Japanese monologues as well.
Mm-hmm.
So now that's one of the challenges that I'm working. I learned from that theater show that even if I can speak Japanese, like my pronunciation obviously isn't native. You know, and my intonation obviously isn't like native.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I want to get as close as I can.
Let's go back to martial arts.
Uh-huh.
A lot may be struggling with this. Do you feel it possible to develop an effective system of self-defense? True martial arts, if there's no live resistance.
Without live resistance?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're learning how to swim, but you're afraid to get in the water first. So then you meet with a coach and then he just lays you down on the ground and he's like, okay, so this is what you do with your arms. This is what you do with your legs. Like, this is how the muscles work. And then you do like strength training and all that other stuff to develop all the right muscles to swim. But then you never actually get in the pool, you know? So that being the case, when you jump into the pool, maybe you'll be able to swim well, but at the same time, maybe there's going to be a lot of factors that you didn't think about. Like, you didn't realize, oh, wait, I have to know how to float.
Mm-hmm.
And self-defense is kind of the same way. You can build a system and you can work on your reaction time and work on distancing and drill certain kind of responses until they're autonomic and all that. At the same time, I think you have to try and apply it against a resisting opponent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of the ultimate test as to whether or not it will work. You know, I mean, and that's not to say that if you do this stuff and you never try it on a resisting opponent that it'll just fail you. It might still work, but the chances of it not working are higher. For example, like you might try and punch somebody in the face, but you don't know what it feels like to have your fist hit someone in the face before,
mm-hmm.
right? So you could end up actually injuring your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you don't know how to take a punch to the face, then you don't know how to brace for it.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean it'll fail you. It just means that the chances of it failing you are higher. Right. Whereas if you learn how to get punched in the face, then when you get punched in the face, it's not a big deal. Like, I've been punched in the face a zillion times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. It's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one of my favorite things. I'd rather avoid it, but it's not the end of the world either. Cause I'm just, you know, just used to it. It's kind of like going to the dentist. For me, getting punched in the face is kind of like that.
How do you see the future of martial arts eventually if you keep bringing it to aliveness?
So that's a really good question because I think martial arts is a thing that's constantly changing and evolving. It's never static. There was a time in the world where the world boxing champion was like the baddest guy on the planet. And then Taekwondo came along and then like Taekwondo became super, 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 super popular. Olympic Taekwondo was the coolest thing that there is. And then the UFC came out and then Jiu-Jitsu was like the next huge thing. Then people kind of started finding the faults in Jiu-Jitsu and then it became about MMA. basically, like, martial arts is just always changing and evolving. And I think it kind of always will be, but I don't think that's a bad thing. In society, I think we have to change with the times. We just have to change and we have to adapt. There has to be a balance between remembering where we came from, but then also thinking about, okay, where are we going? Because you look at a lot of the traditional martial arts techniques and a lot of that stuff, like those situations just aren't real anymore. They don't happen anymore. And there's all kinds of new situations that do happen. So there has to be new techniques to deal with that. I still think it's important to know the old stuff because there might become a time where that kind of thing does happen. And I think even outside of martial arts, I think it's the same with society in general. Is one of the problems that we're facing with now is that we're living in a world that's changing so quickly, especially now because everything's global. I mean, we're dealing with like 100 new inventions every day and society is just coming into flux. And I think for a lot of people, that's scary because they had the way that the world was when they were a kid and they're terrified of that world disappearing. And that's why you have these people that don't like all these changes. There's people that don't like diversification or these people that may not want to accept, you know, people that are transgender because they never saw people like that when they were a kid. Mm-hmm. Right. So for them, it's like weird and scary because it's just new for them. But the fact of the matter is, like I said, there has to be a balance between remembering who we were and where we came from and thinking about where are we going. And like, how do we create a society that accommodates everybody so that people aren't left out, so that we're not missing out on talent? When I listened to your first podcast and, you know, you mentioned that time that you actually thought about committing suicide. Mm. And I thought, I mean, aside from the fact that you're just a very, very dear friend that I just love a lot as a,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, I just generally love a lot as a person. You're just an amazing person and so wildly talented. And I thought, what an incredible loss for the world that would have been if you did it. There's got to be so many other transgender people who are going through that same thing where they think that they're like, they just feel like they don't fit in. So they think that they don't have value. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think it's an incredible loss for the world if those people don't find their way.
Yeah, I have been to a few of your classes, which is the Taekwondo classes. And what I love about it is how amazingly you had variety of individuals from age to nationality and even gender. Did you envision this before it all started? And what's the process of targeting those people that you wanted for your community?
One of the interesting things about Quiet Flame in general, or the Quiet Flame Dojo, is the fact that what I wanted for it more than anything is that I wanted it just to be a safe place where everybody feels safe and welcome and loved. And then they're all about their own process of evolution as themselves. And that was the base of me building this dojo, right? And even the name Quiet Flame, it's all about having passion, but also having acceptance. Mm. You know what I mean? Like not letting your passion burn everybody else out. It's a quiet fire that people want to warm themselves by is the idea. That's the idea behind the name, right? Mm-mm. So in one respect, given that, I'm not surprised that it turned out to be a place with so many different kinds of people. But when I built it, I didn't know that was going to happen. People always see martial arts as being such a, in Japanese, they say like otokorashi, right? Like such a manly thing. Yeah. And like, it's all about like fighting and like machismo and all that. And really martial arts is just about your own path to personal development. And I, for one, am really happy that nobody feels like they have to be macho in my dojo. They can just be themselves and just do their thing and just find their own way. And I'm super glad that you're there. We have one other black belt who's transgender, which I think is super cool because he's just doing his thing. It's just an open place for people. And I think that's dope. I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, I think you should be proud of that. It's amazing. Do you think it's really important for LGBT to have this as a basic to them? I mean, in Japan, it's so safe and you will not probably get into situations, you know, people will bully you in a way that I hate. But other countries, I've heard they do martial arts, especially for LGBT community, just to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Do you think it's really essential?
I think it is really important for LGBT people to do martial arts. Mm-hmm. And not even for the physical side of it, but just because the thing you learn in martial arts is you learn how to fight. And fighting has more than a physical element to it. It's all about this process of getting good at it. It just takes a very long time to get good at it. So you face failure and you face frustration. You face struggles and you face fatigue and tiredness. And you just learn to just keep pushing past it and pushing past it and pushing past it. And I think that's one of the reasons that I think it's really important for LGBT. Being able to fight is just an output. It's an effect of studying it. But really, it's about learning how to push your way through hardships in your own personal journey. As we've discussed time to time, and as you talked about in your podcast, I think for people who are trying to find themselves in places where they feel like they don't fit in, having that process will really carry them at hard times. So in that respect, you know, I wish that we could have more people from the LGBTQ community that were doing martial arts, not even just in my dojang, but just in general. Mm-hmm. I wish more people would find their way to it so that they have a place where
they feel safe.
And, they feel safe mm-hmm. and they can learn methods to deal with their hardships. Mm. That's, I guess, at the end of the day, that's what it's about, is learning how to deal with your hardships.
It is so true. Can we talk about you doing bodyguarding some of the most famous people that had visited here in Tokyo? I think it's one of the most interesting, yet not many people know nothing about it. Can you name names, some celebrities or famous people that you've bodyguarded before?
I'm afraid I can't say any names.
Okay, so it's very confidential.
I can't say any names. As a bodyguard, mm-hmm. it's your job to protect your client and to protect your client's interests. Mm-hmm. It's still the case even after you finish the job. Mm-hmm. You know, so even with all the clients that I've worked for, all the things that I've seen will basically just go with me to the grave because it's just my job to take care of them.
Do you think that martial arts help for doing this kind of job?
Absolutely, it does. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, it does. Because every once in a while, you know, you do have to deal with scary people. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like there's the thing that people don't know about celebrities is that everybody thinks it would be cool to be a celebrity, but celebrities have stalkers. And if you've ever dealt with those people, it's scary, man. Especially female celebrities, the way people get obsessed with them. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I worked for one celebrity. I would work on a security team. And then within that team, they would bring their main celebrity or their main bodyguard from the States. Mm-hmm. So I was working on a team for one celebrity. And then the main bodyguard said, okay, well, listen, you know, we know that she's got a stalker here and he keeps trying to contact her movie character. And we think he might have a knife, but we have no idea what he looks like. So just keep an eye out for somebody that looks unusual somehow. Mm. And I'm like, all right, well, that sounds challenging. And then he's like, oh, no, that's easy. She's only got one, you know. And then he named another celebrity who had 70.
Oh.
Could you imagine having 70 people that follow you everywhere over the world?
Crazy, like crazy, yeah.
Booking hotel rooms next to whatever hotel you get, trying to convert you to their religion and swearing that you're the parent of their unborn child and finding out where you live and then just mailing you like weird. The whole stalker thing is crazy, man. The kind of lack of privacy that they have, it's incredible. I mean, honestly, celebrities make a ton of money, but their lives are hard.
What's your mindset when you're doing bodyguarding all these high profile people?
One of the interesting things about bodyguarding is I think it's one of the last careers out there that's still just perfectly selfless. It's literally body guard, meaning you're using your body to guard their body. No matter what, they have to come first. You know, so I think it requires a really particular kind of character to do that, mm-hmm. you know, and to be able to put yourself on the line for somebody who basically doesn't even know you. Because when you're doing security, you never talk to your client. Because if you're talking to your client, that means you're not watching what's around. So most of the people I've talked to, some of them, I've never even looked them in the eye, ever. If they don't initiate the conversation, then you just never talk to them. Partially too, because with celebrities, everybody wants to talk to them. Everybody's always trying to get eye contact from them and all that. So they deal with it all the time. So they don't want somebody else that's trying to talk to them. You know, so partially out of respect, you know, when I'm working for a client, mm-hmm. as soon as they walk in the room, I just look away. Basically, I just stay cognizant of where they are in the room, mm-hmm. but I never try to physically look in their direction. I keep them in my peripheral.
I've seen some documentaries about celebrity bodyguards. Some of them, they really became friends with the celebrities. They have to be all the time with you eventually. So it becomes a relationship at the end of the day that you are always together more than your family or friends, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it never happened to you like you became friends with any of the celebrities that you've bodyguarded before?
A little bit sometimes. Mm-hmm. A little bit sometimes. Because sometimes you'll, you know, it's you'll meet someone and then your character just matches with their character. And then, like you said, you're just around all the time. Mm-hmm. But generally, like when I'm working for a client, I try not to focus on them at all. So just because I need to be wary of who else is around. Sometimes even just when you're in the car, you know, I mean, there's been times where we'd be
like, think that it's safe, but not really.
Yeah. Well, like there was this one time we were in the car and then, you know, there's like five other bodyguards and there's, you know, car in front and car in back. Mm-hmm. And then I thought things were totally cool. I hadn't slept. So I was trying to stay focused. One of the other bodyguards are like, are you seeing this? And we looked in the rearview mirror and then sure enough, we were being followed. And then, and then what ended up happening? Well, there's a lot of situations where we've been followed before. In one situation, what ended up happening is that we just couldn't shake them. So then eventually they had to pull the car out and then I had to get out and then block the car with my body. And then they took off running and then I had to try and chase them down. And not to like assault them or anything, because if you hurt your client's fans, that reflects badly on the client. So you can't actually hurt them, but I had to know where they are. So when they took off, I just had to take off after them. You know, in this case, there was multiple guys in the car. So I took off chasing after one guy. And then like another guy was like still in the car and another one went another way, you know, and then one guy went after him, one guy went after him. And that kind of stuff happens. And when you see these like stalkers, like the look in these people's eyes is the scariest thing ever. Just incredible, raw determination. You know, like I'm a big guy and some of these guys are not big guys, but just that absolute fearlessness, like they didn't care about me at all.
They probably want to show that to you so that you're not scary to them, right?
Probably. But even then, honestly, they just, they didn't even see me. They didn't care.
Oh, wow.
I was just an obstacle because they were so obsessed with this person, right? If you can be 100 pounds wet and then have zero fearlessness of a guy who's well over twice your weight and like 8 inches taller, who's well trained and who knows how to fight and isn't afraid to fight, and you can face that person fearlessly, that's scary. And thankfully, you know, it's here in Japan where it's safer. Another thing that's so hard for celebrities that I feel so bad for them is literally every single person they meet seems super nice. Everyone seems super nice. And some of them are perfectly malicious, you know, or perfectly selfish. Everybody they meet seems like they're like their best friend. So like, it's like, how do you ever learn to trust anybody? You know, and the thing is you can't, which is why another reason why celebrities just don't talk to people. Because there could be a thing where like, you know, they mention something to me as a bodyguard, but then I'm connected to some tabloid. So then I can say, oh yeah, such and such said this. And then this little thing that they mentioned becomes national news. You know, or for example, like, you know, they're coming out of a bathroom and they just forget to put their fly up. And then one of the people in their inner circle takes a photo of that. And then all of a sudden,
it's national news
that somebody says, and you know, and then people are like making fun of them. And
they get money out of it too.
Yeah. And like, and these people, they're still just people, right? So being made fun of hurts. I mean, that's one of the reasons why you see so many celebrities that end up on drugs and stuff, especially in Korea. Like celebrity suicide is crazy. It's crazy. And it's largely just because of having to deal with paparazzi and then having to deal with stalkers.
So let's talk about Trans Lives Matters and Black Lives Matters. What's your take on that?
I mean, obviously, I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done on both fronts. And one of the things that was really interesting to me in listening to your podcast is that I did see certain parallels in both movements. One of them being that I think like as an African American, there's always this thing where sometimes people will say things that are kind of, that are hurtful, or people will look at you through the lens of a stereotype. You feel like you're constantly fighting to get people to just see you as a person instead of seeing you as a stereotype. So, and I think in that respect, you know, trans people are kind of fighting the same kind of battle. There's certain things that could be said to a trans person that would be really hurtful. Mm-hmm. But for the person saying it, they've never met somebody that's trans before, so they don't know that that's hurtful. Mm-hmm. They just don't know, right? Or it didn't occur to them that that might be hurtful. Mm-hmm. But I'd like for some trans people getting called by their birth name, quote unquote, or being called by their dead name, it's painful because they're trying to leave that life behind. Mm-hmm. But maybe for the people that are around them and that knew them as kids, just calling them by their birth name is just natural. Mm-hmm. And then calling them by a new name is unnatural. So it's just hard for them to do. But, you know, for that person in general, that's just hard. No matter what, I think there's just a lot of work that has to be done on both fronts. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the other things that's quite challenging as well as when you think about Black trans people, mm-hmm. because in general, African-American culture, it's very machismo, right? Mm. So I think especially for Black male to female transgender people, mm-hmm. I think it's probably really, really, really hard, especially if they're living in like predominantly Black communities, because within African-American, even like acceptance of gay people mm-hmm. is still like way lower than mm-hmm. in the rest of America, quote unquote. Gay Black people have a very hard time. I mm-hmm. think gay trans people probably have an even harder time.
More harder.
I think it would just be very, very hard on them. And I'm sure they're in a position where they feel like they have nowhere to go. Mm-hmm. You know, which is, again, why I would just, I can't emphasize enough the importance of getting away from that situation if you can and just walking away from it and starting over somewhere else mm-hmm. if that's what you have to do.
Right. It's so interesting that you share that because you listened to my first podcast where I shared about me in a situation where I got almost killed.
Yeah.
And one of the guy that I've actually encountered was a Black person.
Yeah.
And it's just probably no understanding when he found out about it. So he couldn't understand, right? But he was in trouble.
Yeah.
Which is, I almost actually got killed, but I'm lucky. I'm just lucky enough to be able to escape from that situation.
And I think the thing that's so sad about that as well is that in general, when you're dealing with Black people and then when you're dealing with trans people, what you're dealing with is two different socially disenfranchised groups, mm-hmm. which kind of means that they're on the same team.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Because both groups are like socially disenfranchised, right? Yeah. And they're fighting for the sake of just being, they're fighting to be able to just be seen as regular people.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. So in that respect, makes a lot of sense, you know, mm-hmm. to just not hate on each other. Right. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. if there's anything that I wish I could see more of in the African American community, that I wish there could just be more acceptance of the LGBTQ community.
Exactly. I think it's the lack of understanding.
It is. You know, there's cultural factors that go into that because there's, even if you look at like a lot of traditional African cultures, they're just very, very, very machismo, mm-hmm. right? You know, and then there's the whole kind of religious influence because Black people are also like very, very, very Christian, which I don't think is any reason at all to justify judging other people. Mm-hmm. You know, there's people that take Christianity as a reason to look down on other people. Or to say, you know, these people are evil or whatever. And I don't think that's what it's about at all. But some people just twist it that way. Mm. So, but I really wish that we could just have acceptance and just mutual respect.
Yeah. And bond together and just be together and understand each other.
Exactly. Right.
So Chuck, with all these responsibilities you've had, how do you successfully meet all the demands?
I feel like I'm constantly juggling all the time. Because mm-hmm. at this point, you know, I've got the Taekwondo Dojo, mm-hmm. and then we have the stunt training program, and then the people that we train, we cast in films, mm-hmm. you know, and then there's Strong Body Japan, which is my functional fitness business as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. And there's all the responsibilities with that. And then like, I'm a dad. I've got a little boy that I have.
How old is yours?
He's 5.
Oh, so fast. I haven't even met him yet.
Yeah. It's crazy how fast it's going, mm-hmm. but I've got a strong responsibility to mm. make sure that he turns out to be a good, honest person. Mm, mm, mm. I actually do get a good night's sleep every night. I manage to get at least 6 or 7 hours every night.
Which is like, really important, right? Yeah, it's important for you.
But like, I just wake up and hit the ground running and it's just like A to B to C to D to E to F to bed. And then I wake up and then A to B to C to D to E to every day. Mm, and mm, one of the challenges I'm trying to find now is how do you find that balance of having your own time to just sit and just be.
For your own self, right?
For my own self. Because like I just, you know, I mean, one of the good things about the coronavirus is it really, this whole situation really made me kind of take a step back and look at everything that I was doing and think, maybe I'm doing too much. And maybe I need to back up a little bit, get rid of some of the things that aren't as important to focus on the things that are important. You know, it's, everything always comes down to balance. It's another good thing for martial arts.
It's
all about balance. All about like the Tao, right?
So I love everything you have accomplished. You really work hard. You stay focused. How does the future look for you? All this community, the businesses that you are doing, how do you see the future unfolding for you in the next few years?
The next few years? Basically, I've been on this like weird and amazing, unusual journey of figuring out how to do a lot of different things at once. I've been to 33 countries. I've been to Ushuaia down at the southern tip of South America. And then I've been to the Arctic Circle above Norway, everywhere in between, built several companies, and I've done a million different jobs. And then I guess the end game is like, how do I take all this and then give back? How do I take these things and then create something that's of general service to society? Because I really want to do something from for Detroit, because Detroit's where I'm from. I was lucky enough to have been born into a two-parent family where I had two parents that were willing to just fight their tail off to give me an opportunity, even though I was the baby out of six. But a lot of other kids just don't get that. So like, how do I take these things that I know and then create something to bring more balance to the system, right? And to help give to those people who don't have the kind of opportunities that I had, you know, just so that we can like level everything out. When you build a business, it never settles. You know, you always have to hustle for it and you always have to keep pushing and keep it growing and all that. But as the systems that I've built allow me to step back a little bit, then it's going to be like, okay, well, now how do I take all this stuff that I've figured out how to do and then channel it into something that's more socially oriented? So that's kind of the focus of the next few years, I think.
Very exciting then. If you were to die this evening with no opportunity to communicate with anyone, what would you most regret? Of course, I don't wish you to die. But what would you most regret not having told someone and why you haven't told them?
The thing that I would regret not saying the most is I'm sorry. When you think about what makes a nice person, right? Like some people are just naturally very, very nice. And, you know, other people, they're naturally nice, but they also learn from their parents, right? But I think a big part of what makes people nice is either having gone through difficult experiences that show you how important empathy is because you didn't have somebody there with you. But then another thing is regrets and mistakes that you made in dealing with people and hurting people that you care about, you know? And like, I try to be the nicest person that I can be, but I'm also human, you know? And like, there's looking back at my past, there's a lot of things that I'm not necessarily proud of. There's people that I've hurt that I didn't mean to. When those people disappear, you know, you always wish that you could have the chance to say like, listen, I was just learning. I didn't know any better. And
exactly.
I'm like, I wish to those people, I wish I could have the chance to say that I'm sorry. But I think when you can't do that, the best thing you can do is just try to do better. I'm listening to and kind of watching videos of this guy called the Homie K, who's he's a Japanese guy, but he went to jail for 12 years in the States. Really interesting guy. He's used to be.
What's his name?
His name is K.
K.
Yeah. Okay. And he was, he used to be in organized crime in Japan, and he's done all kinds of just crazy, crazy, crazy things, which is why he ended up in jail. And like one of the worst jails in LA, which is incredible. He does all these volunteer programs to help, to help as many people as he can, you know, largely because of the things that he did. So, and I think for all those horrible things he did, he's just trying to kind of make up for it and did just by being good and by trying to help people out.
I think that's amazing. I think that's how you earn another good karma for you. And like what you said, it's all about learning. Every person that we meet in our lives, it always teaches something. What are your hopes for the future, Chuck?
What I hope for more than anything else is just to be in a space where people can just be themselves. It sounds like such a small thing, but it's such a huge thing because so many people never feel they can be themselves. I think it's just being able to express yourself honestly and genuinely as yourself is just huge, you know? And like, I would love to live in a world where everybody can just do that without feeling like they're going to be judged for it.
Mm-hmm.
For myself, for me personally, I'm a car guy. I love cars.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I've got a Celine Mustang in the States because I've shown you pictures of it before. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I want to do is I want to go to Mustang driving school.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I want to go to stunt driving school. And then I want to go back to Mustang driving school. My personal goal is there's so many things that I want to do with that car, you know, and there's so many things that I've got a whole different set of goals that are just related to the car. So for myself, I would like to be able to either spend more time because I keep it in the States, largely because you got wide open American roads and it's just an American muscle car. And I'd like to be able to go back to the States to drive a lot more. And of course, I got family there, you know, bring my son to hang out with the fam or find a way to bring it here, which I'm working on as well. And then to actually use that car to do stuff for people too, which I think is completely possible. Right. And I just have to figure out how. And I think I'm already working on that.
Thank you for sharing that. What's the best to reach you if someone is interested on the classes that you provide?
My company is called Quiet Flame Productions. We do film production. We train stunt people. We cast those stunt people in movies. And there's the Taekwondo school side of it. The other one is Strong Body Japan, which is functional fitness training, which is basically all about putting the strength back into your body. As you get older, like certain things just naturally kind of atrophy a little bit and you just lose strength, but you can get it all back. It's just a matter of knowing how, you know, and you have a lot of people that are walking around with lower back aches or with shoulder problems and walking around in pain when they just don't have to, because all that stuff has ways to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot of people just don't know how to fix it, but a lot of them is very fixable and it's easily fixable.
Mm-hmm.
So Strong Body Japan is about dealing with that and about helping people to kind of reclaim their bodies when working behind a desk has just cost them the loss of a lot of strength, or the modern lifestyle has just cost them a lot of their strength. Yeah, just strongbodyjapan.com. Strong Body, it's a super new company, but it's already building very, very rapidly. It's crazy how fast it's going. Quiet Flame took me 3 years to get it to the point that I'd say this is a solid company. And with Strong Body, we did it in like 6 months before this is like a seriously legit thing. And like I said, the next thing that I would like to do after this is something more socially conscious, in particular, if it can be related to Detroit.
I just want to acknowledge you for constantly showing up with a huge, vulnerable heart, educating me and how much I really appreciate your friendship.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate you Tiffany. I think you're just amazing.
Thanks for being a constant giver to everyone. I am proud of the amazing works you do for the society because you are making a difference. I'm so looking forward to creating projects with you, which I won't tell everyone yet. I'll announce them once we finish them. So also a big shout out to our Quiet Flame family.
Go QF.
I love Quiet Flame.
Yeah. Go QF. QF fam. Bada boom.
The flow of positivity, the amazing talents and skills by all the members. It's just, you know, always amazed me.
Super nice people.
Yeah.
Everybody's super nice.
I know. So I'm truly grateful for making me a part of it.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm super, super glad that you came to us and you found us. And
this has been amazing, Chuck. Again, thank you. Thank you very much for being here today. And I hope to see you soonest with the acting classes and the story classes
too. Yes. Yes. And, Just to let all you guys who are listening know, Tiffany is very much becoming an amazing actress, and you're gonna see that. You're gonna see that sometime soon. Like I've been working with her for almost a year now, and
it's so fast, man.
Yeah, and the amount of progress that you've made is in acting is incredible. The scene you played yesterday, like I could completely believe it. It was fantastic. I'm super proud of you.
You're absolutely right with acting because it just boosts confidence and it makes you train and be aware of yourself more.
Acting makes you very present.
Exactly.
You know? And it teaches you how to be aware of your vulnerabilities without being afraid of them.
Mm.
And that is an incredible skill.
Because
a lot of people that are the worst people in the world is because they're afraid of their own vulnerabilities, right? But once you learn how to be in touch with them and how to just accept them and then how to just quietly sit in yourself.
Mm.
Like, that's incredible. It's amazing. Yeah.
Can't wait for more. Thank you so much, Chuck.
You're welcome, Tiffany. Thank you, too.
I want to give a shout out to PureShop.jp for their magical and essential products. I highly recommend, and I myself use, is called Face Care Oil. It's very aromatic. The oil itself contains soy oil, argan oil, apricot, kernel oil, jojoba oil, and lavender oil. I use this oil before I go to bed. Just spread it around my face and I feel so relaxed and I'll be able to sleep so good. So definitely check it out. I highly recommend it. All the products at PureShop.jp are all organic. There's plenty of stuff that you would like. Thank you, PureShop.jp. Life is unexpected, and that's an understatement. And you often have no clue as to what life would throw at you next. The fact of the matter is that our society is rarely peaceful, and all you have to do to confirm the same is to review the local dailies to get an idea of what you may be up against. You never know if you will end up getting mugged tomorrow, and chances are that you think that the area you reside in is 100% safe and that nothing untoward can happen to you in such an area. Self-defense is essential. I believe that we definitely need it in order for us to be aware of whatever might happen in situations. As I've talked to Chuck during the interview, I've had the experience of almost got killed a few times in my life. And when that happened, I wish that I know how to protect myself from such situations. And another thing that I've learned from taking Taekwondo classes is a self-respect. Self-defense classes will teach us about the need for self-respect and how you need to respect your opponent as well, and how you need to respect yourself, which is the most important thing. This can also help you quit taking unnecessary risks, and in the process can help save our lives. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed our episode today, please share it to your friends. You can copy and paste the link wherever you are currently listening. Text your friend, share on your Instagram stories, on your Facebook page. Tag me and Chuck. I'm going to go add information about Chuck and me on the show notes below. Share your thoughts on this interview. And if it's your first time here, please do me a favor to subscribe on the podcast. Leave us a review. In every review, it makes me so happy. It's like giving me a virtual hug. You can impact someone's life right now by sharing our episode today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you know how much you matter, how much I appreciate your time in listening to our podcast, how much I love and appreciate you. I'm truly grateful to your kindness and support. As I always say, sprinkle kindness wherever you go. I love you guys so much.